Thank you, Shannon. You did great. And just for a brief moment there, I almost called you Cassie. That's never happened before, has it? No, not once. Oh, but that was terrific. Thank you so much for blessing us. Yeah. While we're in thanking people, as Jim mentioned earlier, it is Memorial Day weekend. And I would like just take a moment to recognize anybody who has served in the armed services or as a first responder. If you would be so kind just to stand up so that we may express our appreciation to you. Yeah. We thank you for your service. It's been a blessing to all of us, whether we know it or not. It is, like I said, it's Memorial Day weekend. And Memorial Day has a very interesting history. I was doing a little research on it this week, and I just found some very interesting things about it that I wanted to share with you. So Memorial Day actually seems to have begun in the southern states during the Civil War. And what they would do is they would pick a day out of the year, and everybody would gather at the cemetery, and they would decorate the graves of the fallen soldiers. They would have a picnic. They'd have hymn singing. They'd have preaching. They'd have kids running around. For those of you who might remember it, it was very similar to what we would call homecoming at a church, when churches used to have homecomings. But they did not call it Memorial Day. They called it Decoration Day. The first example of Decoration Day happening nationwide was in 1968 on May 30th. A church in Ohio gathered together and thought it was a great idea, and they celebrated Decoration Day once again. That caught on very quickly, and they chose the date of May 30th to be Decoration Day for two reasons, which I found very interesting. The first reason was no major battle during the Civil War happened on May the 30th. So there was no other observations. They didn't want to step on anybody else honoring their loved ones. So no other major battle happened on May 30th. The second reason is in the North, flowers were in full bloom at that time of year, so they had to wait until that time of year to decorate the cemeteries. So it once again was called Decoration Day, and it stayed that way pretty much until 1888, and that's when we have the first example of someone calling it Memorial Day. The first Memorial Day was celebrated on May the 30th, 1888, and it stayed that way until most of the time, though, they called it Decoration Day. I retract. Up until after World War II. World War II Memorial Day took over as the most popular name for Memorial Day, and it was celebrated on May the 30th until 1967. And that's when the Uniform Monday Holiday Act, or 1968, excuse me, the Uniform Monday Holiday Act was enacted. The Uniform Monday Holiday Act changed the dates of four holidays to specified Mondays in order to create convenient three-day weekends. I guess the tourist industry had nothing to do with that. This act took effect in 1971, and Memorial Day at that point moved from May the 30th to the last Monday of the month of May. If you're wondering what the other three holidays were, one is obvious, it's Labor Day, Columbus Day, and Washington's birthday. So we did not apparently celebrate those days on Mondays prior to 1971, which I was alive then, but I just didn't realize it. You know, particularly with Labor Day, all I knew was Labor Day was a sign that school was coming, and I was sad. That's all I remember about it. And Memorial Day was like, school is ending, and I am happy. So, you know, and the other holidays were school is out, and that is great. So, you know, to an 8-year-old, that's what holidays are. Memorials, or let me first start with something. The definition of memorial is of or relating to the memory, whether it relates to recognition of dates or recognition through monuments. Memorials are as old as human history. I find one of my favorite examples of a memorial. It's found in Joshua 1, 4 through 7. And it's after they'd crossed the Jordan River, and God commanded the children of Israel to pile 12 stones up on the banks of the Jordan. And the reason he asked them to do that is, he said, to serve as a sign among you in the future. When your children ask you, what are those stones doing there? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan River was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it crossed the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. So that was 3,000 years ago. We see the pyramids being built 5,000-6,000 years ago. Those were memorials. We've seen memorials all over the world throughout history. Even God established a memorial. Does anybody know what it is? Who was that out there? The rainbow. The rainbow. I've set this sign in the sky to you that I will no longer destroy the earth by flood or by water. So God even established a memorial for all of us through the rainbow. So memorials are very important to us. We do them to preserve memories, because memories are something we can look back on. We can learn from memories. We can be inspired by memories. We can be warned by memories. We can be comforted by memories. I pulled up Psalm 77, 1 through 12. And I got to apologize to Jim here. That happened after you emailed me and the bulletin was already made. And I said, this scripture is what I want to go with. And I apologize to y'all. If y'all want to look at Psalm 77, 1 through 12, David is in the throes of despair when he wrote this psalm. And I watch and read as he goes through all those different things that memories do for you. So let me read it to you. I cried out to God for help. I cried out to God to hear me. When I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night, I stretched out untiring hands, and I would not be comforted. I remember you, God, and I groaned. I meditated, and my spirit grew faint. You kept my eyes from closing. I was too troubled to speak. I thought about the former days, the years long ago. I remembered my songs in the night. My heart meditated and my spirit asked, will the Lord reject forever? Will he never show us his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in his anger withheld his compassion? Then I thought, to this will I appeal. The years when the Most High stretched out his right hand. I remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your miracles long ago. I will consider all your works and meditate on all your mighty deeds. Your ways, God, are holy. What God is as great as our God? David goes from despair to worship in the space of a passage. He is remembering the hard times, thinking God has left him, but then he latches on to the memories of what God has done and comes to the realization that God is God. He is mighty, and there is no God like him. And he can rely on God. Even though he may not seem there at that moment in time, God is there. And God is great, and God is good, and God is watching out for him. So David is able to find comfort in that and get through this long night. It just is a lesson for all of us to take with us when we're struggling. Search for the things that God has done in the past. Search those memories where God has done mighty works. Memories are tied to events, and events are tied to moments. So a lot of those memories that you will go back for and look at are memories that happened in an instant, in a moment. And I want to try and demonstrate that to you. Can any of you tell me what happened in your life on Tuesday, September 19th, 2017? If I see anybody pulling out their phones, I'm going to call cheater. Anybody? Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. I can tell you nothing about Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. I don't know. I can even look back at my planner and probably not remember that day, because nothing significant happened to me on that day. Nothing memorable happened. Now, if I were to ask you, do you remember your first kiss? Yeah. Do you remember the first time you saw the love of your life? Yeah. You remember a favorite birthday in your childhood? Yeah, you do. You remember a moment of sorrow? Yep. A time of celebration? Of course. There are moments that are tied to memories, and they can't extract them from each other. They're just intertwined, and they are so important to create those moments, because memories are fragile, fleeting things. It takes effort to hold on to them, but they're important. And I've left out a specific type of memory. How many moments with God do you remember? I think I can come up with some obvious ones. For me, I remember my profession of faith. I remember my baptism. I remember recommitting my life to God. I remember my call to ministry. But more than anything else, I remember my first mission trip. My first mission trip took place in March of 1986 to West Virginia. The previous fall, there had been horrific flooding in West Virginia. Several people had been killed. It had been 500-year type floods. They just swept through the valleys and wiped out houses and, for oddly enough, a bunch of turkey barns. So I spent a week in West Virginia gutting houses and tearing down turkey barns that still had dead turkeys in them. I remember that clearly. But we would be on the roof of the barns, and we would just have our axes, and we'd be chopping up the tin roofs and prying up the tin and folding it up and then stripping the frame off. And we spent a whole week just working our hands to the bone. And I remember how excited the pastor of the church we were serving was to tell us all his stories and share what had happened to him. They'd rebuilt the church, but they'd left the water line on the church to remind them of how high the water had come. I remember Keith and Ed and Trey and all these people that I went on this journey with. And that was 33 years ago. And it's just like yesterday to me. I think missions, well, let me finish by saying, since that time, I have been on a lot of mission trips, literally dozens of them. And I'll be honest with you, some of them blend together, especially middle school mission trips, because when you take a bunch of middle schoolers anywhere, it seems like the same thing over and over again. Stop doing that. Don't do that. Don't pull his hair. Stop hitting each other. Get down there. I'm going to call your mother. That is a youth mission trip for middle schoolers. They all seem the same. But with the high schoolers, they start to get it. With the high schoolers, they start to figure it out. And there are some incredible moments from those mission trips that I remember. And what I wanted to do today is I wanted to sort of emphasize missions in a different way. So I've invited a couple of dear friends of mine to talk to y'all. And I'm going to scoot around the furniture a little bit up here while they come on up and just try and get it so y'all can see us better. Here we go. And my apologies to the choir. we'll do the best we can for you to hear us. Thank you. Okay. This is Catalina and Catherine. Anybody here not know Catalina and Catherine? Nobody's going to admit it. All right. So the reason I've invited Catalina and Catherine here is they've had a couple of things happen in their lives that have drawn my attention and have represented our church and spoken powerfully to me. Now, the first thing I'd like to mention is Catherine, in the spring, April?
Yeah.
In April, she wrote an article for, is it the Towson newspaper or the Towson University?
Yeah, Towson Odyssey, which is a online news publication for college students. They can just submit whatever they want, and college students from all over the country can submit whatever they want. So it's really, really cool.
It is. It is amazing. You've submitted several pieces to this
yes.
on the Odyssey. The piece that you submitted in April was all about missions.
Mm-hmm.
And could you just give us a little gist of what you said in that article?
Yeah, so the article was titled Mission Work Taught Me Lessons I Could Never Learn in School. And essentially, in this article, I discussed how I feel as if every student should go on a mission trip because you learn so many different life lessons while on those trips that you could never learn in a school classroom. You learn about what to be said, and something that I feel as if everyone should experience, especially if, you know, you're a Christian student and you're younger. I feel as if it's something very important that you go out and you learn how to share the gospel and you learn how to connect with people on that level and things of that nature. So I felt as if I should share it with everyone.
And what impressed me most is the Odyssey. Is that the best way to call it?
Yes.
Missing all, it's by no means a religious forum.
No.
It's pretty wide open. And I'm impressed that you had the courage to put that out there. What prompted you just to want to put it out there in that forum?
So there's kind of like a pretty cool story attached with it. So one of my best friends from college, she had just gotten baptized that week. And we had gone with her to the church to watch her baptism. And so that was a really cool experience just to see like one of my best friends get baptized. That was really fun. But her boyfriend had come up for the weekend, you know, to celebrate, and he's not a Christian. And he started asking me and my friend Kayla, the one who got baptized, and my friend Maggie, he started asking us questions about the church and about God. And then Kayla mentioned that, like, Maggie and I had gone on youth trips before, and we had gone to, quote, Jesus camp, as they said. And I was like, well, it's more than that, I can promise you. And he had actually asked about it, and he was asking, like, what we did, and then he was asking questions about the Bible. In fact, I almost texted you because he had a very important question that I was trying to answer, and I couldn't. But, so something just prompted me, and we were talking, and I was like, you know, missions work is something that I feel as if it's very important that someone just goes out and they can do. No matter if you're a Christian or not, just do something to where you help someone else. And you can really see what God can do through that. And so I said that to him, and he was like, well, maybe I'll, like, go out and do something if you guys go and do it. And we're like, okay, cool. And so we were trying to find, like, things to do. But so that was really cool. And that's kind of what prompted me. That, and I was tired of sitting in classes. And I was like, you know what would be way better than sitting in a college class right now? Doing mission work, because I'm not about that right now. So I was like, I need summer to come so I can go on some mission trips.
Oh.
And so, but that's essentially what prompted me to write it.
That's awesome. And now I was able to access your article via Facebook,
because mm-hmm.
we're friends.
Yes.
Yeah. How would any of these folks out here be able to access it if they weren't your Facebook friend?
I can post it onto my Facebook and make it public to everyone. I can post it to the church Facebook page. And if not, you can go to theodysseyonline.com. And if you look up the title, which is Mission Work, Taught Me Lessons I Could Never Learn in School, or if you just look up Mission Work in the little search bar on the top of the website, there'll be a picture of me. This beautiful face right here.
Yay.
And other people from our youth group. And that's the article. If you guys want to read
that
it.
That is awesome. Thank you, Catherine. I'm going to get back to you in a few minutes because I've got some questions I want to ask.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to get on to Catalina here. And Catalina has another story. The best way I can describe this is for the past several years, my wife, Becky, her sister has been begging us to give them some help. They do a mission trip to a Native American reserve territory in Canada. I realized when I looked it up, it's south of Edmonton. And one of the things that I'm gonna ask you, see if you can. It used to be called Hobima, but Hobima apparently is like an English poet or something like that, and that was not their native tongue. So, what is the name of the
They're called the Musqueaches. I finally learned it.
Musqueaches.
Musqueache. There you go.
And I have not been able to pronounce that. It was good with Hobima. I could tell everybody, oh, we got to do a mission trip to Hobima. But then I would get to Musqueache, and I'd be like, yeah, it's an Indian reserve thing. Because I couldn't spell Musqueache, much less say it.
Chi.
I still can't say it.
You got it.
So we've been trying for years to get some of our youth, some of our older kids, to go on a trip with Elizabeth and John because they needed help. And what they primarily needed help with was the younger kids. While they were doing health clinics and different workshops and stuff with the adults. They needed some help with the children. So this year, they called again, and Becky and I picked up the phone and texted and emailed and Facebooked. And, of course, all the people we wanted to go were in college, and they couldn't get away that early, except Catalina. And Catalina was like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. So I don't have the text that was sent to Becky from Elizabeth, but I'll give you the gist of it, and then I'm going to ask you a few questions. The gist of the letter was, please send us more Catalinas. Please send us more Catalinas. We need more of them. So why do Elizabeth and John want more Catalinas?
Kind of what Catherine was saying, just because I feel like since we've grown up with going on mission trips, and like Catherine was saying, it's so much better to do it once you're younger, because that's basically how you're raised. You don't learn lessons later in life. The best example I can give of that is learning languages. Whenever you learn a language, they always say, do it while you're younger. Your brain is more adaptable and it's more willing to learn. Same thing with mission trips. Like, you want to grow up with that, because sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes whenever you do it later on in life, you just don't get the full gist of it as when you would growing up with it. So because I had that background, and also I work at a summer camp, so this gives me a huge benefit. But I'm used to being around kids 24/7. And also since I have a darker complexion because I'm Hispanic, they all thought I was actually Native American. The nation that we were with was actually the Cree nation. So they actually thought I was one of the people in the tribe. So that made it a lot easier for them to actually work with me and like talk with me and have a little bit of like confidence in me without thinking that I was going to judge them. So I just really got to relate to them on a personal level, which most of the kids really needed.
Apparently they thought you were a Blackfoot.
Yeah, fun fact, I can't hear really well, nothing like, you know, clinical, just my ears just stink. And so I thought they said Bigfoot at first, and I was like looking down my feet, I was like, I mean, I guess I'm kind of insulted, but yeah, I guess I'm a Bigfoot. And they said, no, Blackfoot, it's a tribe. I was like, oh, well, that didn't answer your question clearly. I'm not a Blackfoot.
No, but you fit right in.
Yeah.
And can you tell me some of the things you were doing there, some of the things that you experienced while you were there?
Yeah, so like Richard was saying, we do have we had three different sections. One was for the youngest kids. We had teenage group, and then we had the adult group. Pretty much the entire gist of it was aimed towards the adult group, because we wanted to have a grief counseling session for the adults and learn how to manage their emotions better, because it all goes back to their culture. In their culture, you can't smile for pictures. You can't really show too much emotion. So whenever you're faced with something as like devastating as grief, because there's been a lot of deaths relating to suicide, alcohol-related deaths, there's just everyone has to go through grief, but not everyone knows how to handle it super well. And seeing how we were on a reserve, they don't have many resources. This is a medical mission trip, per se, for mental health, going out and helping the adults understand their emotions and how to use it in a more, I can't think of the word, but just
healing.
Yeah, in a more healing way. Yeah. So they just don't take it out in an angry way or just use it in a negative way, per se. And then while the adults were there, obviously they needed daycare because, like I said, there's not many resources out there. There's not even a grocery store. The nearest place that you can buy food is in a Walmart that's about 40 minutes away. So there's not many resources. So while the parents were inside getting, I say I'm a lot, excuse me, for mental health, then we were taking care of the kids, and we were just trying to give them a good time because, like I said, part of the culture, they don't have a lot of time just to be kids because usually they're kids raising their younger siblings, so they don't really have a lot of chances to be kids. So we got to play with them. We got to give them beach balls, hula hoops, and play every game imaginable. And we stuffed these kids with as much candy as we could, which typically would be a bad idea, but we were there for a week, so we thought, why not?
That's awesome. Could you have used some help?
Yes.
Okay, that's – I hope you all heard that. Couple things that I want to say. First is Elizabeth and John have moved the date of the mission trip now to later in May in order to facilitate more of us to join them if we should choose to. Because, like I said, they wanted more Catalinas, but Becky's sister, first off, doesn't she sound just like Becky?
I thought I was talking to Miss Becky on the phone, and it took me a really long time to realize that I wasn't.
Yeah. Becky's sister is a wonderful, sweet, delightful human being, but she has high standards. That's why it took me so long to get into the family and good with her, because I was marrying her sister. But she has very high standards, and she gave you one of the most best compliment I've ever heard her give somebody. She said, Catalina gets it. They've had educators and people who work with children come on these trips and go away just, we can't do this, because they would try and structure things, they would try and teach things, they would try and force their methodology on these kids. You just got in there and loved them. And that's what they need, is somebody to just love them. And that's what Elizabeth was saying, is you just got right in there and loved on them, and that was what they needed. That's exactly what they needed. And really, that's what we've learned on a lot of these trips, isn't it? That one of the things, I'll ask you both a question, primarily relating to MFuge. Every year you go to MFuge, you spend 3 hours or so preparing stuff to do with the kids at the sites. What generally happens to that stuff?
It goes away. It's just out the door.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So whenever we would go on mission trips and stuff, like you said, you have to learn to be really flexible. One idea that you may walk in with, you're just kind of like on your toes, like using any like ideas that you have like stored away from who knows where. And what Richard was saying before about like these kids, obviously they're Native American, and like most of these people were down south. They had very thick southern accents, and they didn't really trust them all that well, which you could get because of just the history between them. So this is something that I learned on a mission trip and walked into this mission trip to the Native American Reserve with this mindset. But on one mission trip to MFuge, I can't remember this guy's name for the life of me, but I remember it was my second year, and we had tried to come up with like a structured plan of like how to like work with these kids, and he kept on telling me, after I became frustrated just a little bit, he said, just love on them. God will work out the rest. Just love on them. Just plant the seed, and all will work out in the end. That's the only way that you're going to come out of this not being frustrated. Just love on them, and that's all you can do.
Yeah, I'm going to lead into a question I'm going to ask you by sharing this story. I got the bright idea one year that I was going to do noodle games with the kids. So I brought a duffel bag full of pool noodles that I'd cut in half. And I got ready to do my noodle games with the kids, and I handed them all out to the kids. I never did one of my noodle games, because can you guess what they spent the rest of the day doing? Beating the snot out of each other with the noodles. I mean, they just all, and I just sort of sat back and watched it. And they had the most fun they'd ever had, I think. But, I'm like, you've got the noodle relay, and you've got the noodle this, and you, but they just wanted to, my name is Aningo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die, and whack each other over the head. So any funny stories about mission trips that you can share with us?
I know one that was probably one of my favorites. It goes along the line of, like, here, the one thing that I always take away is, like, you can plan all you want of what activities you want to do with the kids, but the moments where you see God the most are the completely unplanned ones. And one of my favorite and funniest memories is we were in, I believe, Louisville, Kentucky. And it was me, and for those of you who know Ricky Kelly and my best friend Maggie. And we were at a trailer park in Louisville. And there's one little boy, and all he wanted to do was play Foursquare. That was the only thing he wanted to do, was play Foursquare. So that entire week, me, Maggie, and Ricky all played Foursquare with this little kid for, like, the whole entire time. And eventually, I'm not going to say, like, name names, but somebody, may have been me, I don't know, got the favorite Foursquare award player, and I was like, there we go. And it was just so funny. This kid was going around crowning each of us, and, like, one day we were doing, like, little prayer requests with some of the kids, and the one little boy who we were playing Foursquare with all week requested that we play Foursquare with him tomorrow, but unfortunately it was our last day. So he prayed that he could find someone else to play Foursquare with that was as fun as us. And I was like, that's the cutest thing ever. And I love that. And I will never forget that kid.
That's awesome. That covers a lot of categories right there. You got anything just funny?
Definitely just being pulled every which direction by every single kid, because there's only, the ratio is about like one person for every like four kids. So you'll have like, that's the ratio, but it never pans out that way. So you have like 15 kids all trying to get a piggyback ride on you. And the rule on mission trips is that like you're not really supposed to let kids climb on you. But here you are like walking around. You have like five kids stacked on your head, 14 on your back, like five at least on each limb. You're just like, okay, I'm just trying to walk.
I've never been so glad I'm a guy than when I'm on mission trips at these parks, because the ladies, you get complete makeovers every day, don't you? The nails, the face, the hair, they braid it.
I've never looked better.
Yes. Yes, hot pink and blue are great on your face. But, yeah, the kids just love to do your nails. They love to paint your face. They love to do your hair, braid your hair. It's always so funny to watch, and I'm like, can't braid my hair. I just don't have enough of it. Ha, ha, ha. You know.
Fun fact, if you guys don't know Richard, he did dye his hair pink one time.
I more than once I've dyed my hair pink. And there is a picture of where I did let the kids do my nails in the hallway out there, if anybody wants to try and track it down. It's very disturbing. Are there any difficult moments on trips that you would care to share with us?
I think the week is very tiring for a lot of people, especially if you're in a middle schooler or if it's just your first time in general going to one of these things. By the end of the week, you are so very tired. You are constantly going. You wake up at 6 a.m., go to breakfast, go to morning worship, go to some like a little Sunday school type of like small group devotion. Then you go out for 3 hours, and you're outside most of the time. And you're doing so many different activities. And then you come back, you have maybe an hour to shower and chill out, and then you got to go to dinner, then you go to worship, then you have a night activity. So the whole day for you is planned out. So by the end of the week, you are, like, so beyond tired. So I think the only, like, difficult things that arise are all those tired emotions kind of swirl.
Yeah.
And people within the group can argue with each other, and, you know, by the end of the week, you're just like, I want to be away from people. Like, I can't handle this. At least that's how I am. I'm one of those people, like, I need to recharge, like, set my social clock back. And so, but I think that's the only, like, difficulty, I guess, that you really run into.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, you get a few people that you'll meet who just don't want to talk to you about anything. And that's fine. And, like, there's some moments when they don't want to talk to you, but by the end of the trip you may get one or two words out of them, and like, that's fine. You know, it's just all how God wants to make it work.
Exactly. Anything, Catalina?
And for me, every single mission trip I've ever gone on, I think it's just because I have like, I get really attached to people really quickly. But on the last day is always the most heartbreaking, and almost, I can guarantee, almost every single time, you're always going to drive to sites. You'll have like three stowaways in your van, so you have to kind of like do a sweep, like, okay, is there any behind this seat? Any behind this
under
seat?
Under the seats,
On top of the actual vehicle. We had that one time.
Yep.
We drove all the way back.
She's not
joking. And we had to drive all the way back.
Try and stow away with us. Yeah. According to what Catalina said, I have a saying, Game of Thrones, if y'all watched that or read it, the big scary thing they talked about is winter is coming. Whenever I'm on a mission trip, it's Thursday is coming. Mm-hmm. And Thursday nights, we'll just have another talk. That's a whole sermon, Thursday nights. Anything, I'm going to wrap it up here, but is there anything powerful or life-changing that has happened to you on any of these trips?
Yeah, so I guess, I'm trying to think. There's been so many powerful moments, but I come from a musical family. Like, my brother, he leads 11:15 worship. My mom sang in the choir, like, whole just musical family. My uncle played bluegrass, so I'm always moved by music. And I just remember one year it had been like one of those years, just like things were just rough, not going the way that anyone wanted to. Which, I mean, there's a reason for it. You just never know. And there was one night where everyone just sang nothing but the blood, but it was completely no instruments, no music, all a cappella. And I think I was standing in the back with someone else from our youth group, and we walked in, and it was just so powerful to hear that and to hear other people singing and how many people were together singing a song about God. And I don't know, it was just very moving, very powerful. And I just remember I sat there, and it was one of those moments where, like, you try to sing along, but then, like, nothing came out. Like, I just couldn't, like, say anything. And I call one of those, like, God's telling you to just stop talking, like, stop trying to do anything and just listen. And so I think that was one of, like, the most powerful moments. I just broke down in, like, full-on tears. It's awesome.
And for me, like I was saying a little bit earlier, just whenever you love on these kids, they want that love, they want that attention. And just being able to fulfill just a little part of their lives for them, you can really see, like, when they reciprocated back, that you really did, like, cause something in their life for the better. You're not going to know exactly what that is, but you know for a fact that you did something good for their life and that they're going to remember that for the rest of their life. They may not remember it. It may not be one of those moments that you're going to remember in exact detail, but it's one of those moments that you can remember the feeling behind it, the emotion behind it. And every single kid, I'm the worst with names. You can ask anyone. I'm the worst with names. But if I look at a kid, if we go back to the same site, I will say, I remember you, and they will come up and, like, grab me, like, pretty much put me in, like, a chokehold. Like, they'll remember you, and I think that is just always the most moving part. Just
they
to love
do
all
remember
these kids.
You. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us up here and sharing with us. I wanted everybody to hear this, and you know, y'all did great. So if y'all want to step on down, I'm going to wrap this thing up for us. Give them a big hand. If you do a poll, or if you ever look at research about the greatest fears people have, oddly enough, the number two fear is always death. Number one is public speaking, which I don't know what that says about us, but you know, we may want to get our priorities straight, but doing public speaking is not easy, so thank you all for doing that. I shared this with you because I want to challenge you all. If you've not had any moments like these, seek them out. You don't have to go to, I'm going to say Hobima again. You don't have to go to Hobima. You don't have to go to Mexico or Louisiana or Nashville, Tennessee. You can seek out a mission trip of your own. I can help you find different experiences. There's hundreds out there. But I would challenge you to find one of these experiences and take advantage of it. If you would like to go to Canada, I will have the dates ready for you in a week or two if you'd be very interested. And Becky's sister and husband are amazing. They've been doing this for 30 years or so, and they've been in every imaginable situation, and they will inspire you. So that's all very cool. But I just want to challenge you to seek out these missions moments with God. Because they're rare, and they're precious, and once you have them, they're amazing. So that's really all I wanted to say today. In a few minutes, Jim's going to lead us in the closing hymn, and I'll be down here. If any of you would like to just come talk to me, pray with me. If you have any decisions you feel you need to make, we'll talk about that. But let's close in prayer. Father, I thank you for Catalina and Catherine. I thank you for giving us opportunities to serve you. We don't know what a blessing it is, what an honor it is. So, Father, I ask you to help us to take advantage of those opportunities. Help us to seek them out, because they truly are jewels in our crown, but not the kind of jewels we think about. They're the jewels we take out and polish late at night and remember, that cheer us up and carry us through the hard times. They're the jewels that make us realize why this life is worth living. What value it has. So, Father, help us to seek those jewels out. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.